Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah.
Hey, everybody. It's Aiden. And today we're going to be exploring some of the core routines of nature connection.
Yeah, this is John. I'm excited to continue this journey. We've been visiting some of the core routines. And today we have an interesting combination of things that include the third one, which is expanding our senses, and the fifth one, which is animal forms. But these two, you know, they kind of bridge both of these things. And so let me just explain that a little bit. Expanding our senses is quite literally an intentional practice of when we're outside or inside, for that matter. You know, we try to close our eyes for a second and just tune into the feeling in our body. You know, we feel the weight of ourselves. We feel maybe the temperature differences on our skin. You know, it's cool down here by my feet. It's a little warmer on my left shoulder. I can feel a breeze on my right cheek, you know, that kind of thing. So you just become really intentional about really getting into your senses, right? One at a time, you know? So I often have people start with that, you know, maybe what we would call tactile sense, right? What information are we getting from our skin? But then there's also the sense of our weight, right? And then there's the sense of hot, cold, right? Damp, dry, sun, shade, you know? So these are all sensations we just explore and tune into, you know, one sense at a time. And then we try to add more senses, right? So we might have people listen to the farthest sound to the left that they can hear, the quietest sound off to their left, and really tune into that. And then with their eyes closed, do the same, tune into the one on the right, and then behind them, and then in front of them in the same way. And then now try to listen to all four directions at the same time. And the goal of that, of course, is to expand the senses until we're no longer mechanically willing ourselves to listen in these places, but all of a sudden we're now hearing all at once. And instead of having this sort of linear process of going left, right, front, back, people report, you know, after weeks of practicing this every day, they suddenly find that they are tuning into the sphere of sound around them, which I love that transition. When people talk about that, I'm like, yeah, we're home, you know, like that's sensory integration at its best right there. But now what are we trying to do? We're trying to layer on the senses, right? So now can you tune into the tactile information, the weight, heat, cool, you know, everything coming from your skin and your sense of your own weight? Can you combine those with the sphere of sound? You know, so now you're tuning into both senses at once, which is a lot really in the beginning. You know, it's a lot to track. But, you know, then we add the sense of smell, the sense of taste. And then I have people open their eyes. And when they open their eyes, I ask them to just gaze off into the distance, pick a point. You know, like if you're in a room, like a spot on the wall, but don't focus on it. Instead, take in the whole periphery of your vision, like see the ceiling, see the floor, or see the sky, see the ground, right? And then maybe take your fingers, your outstretched arms, and bring your fingers from outside your field of vision simultaneously. Wiggle your fingers on your left and right hand so until you can barely see the fingers coming into the edge of your field of vision, and try to watch both hands wiggling at the same time while, you know, in a diffused way, just kind of staring straight ahead. And then I encourage people to take their fingers and trace the edge of their vision and notice that they have a shape, which is basically a big ellipse. It's a big kind of a egg-shaped thing that's wider than it is tall. But we actually have this really amazing field of vision, and we call this, you know this as peripheral vision. When we're teaching it to children, we call it owl eyes, which is an animal form. So that bridges us into animal forms for a moment. Okay. So, you know, a lot of the core routines are sort of intermingling, interwoven, right? It's sort of artificial to separate them, because if we had grown up in a deeply nature connected culture, you know, living subsistence, you know, these core routines would be part of our everyday, but we wouldn't artificially separate them. They would have been role modeled to us, and we would have kind of learned them from childhood and embodied them. But, you know, we sometimes have to have these modern pathways to get us back to things that have been atrophied. So it's somehow easier to teach children, instead of saying, go into your peripheral vision, or what my late mentor Tom Brown would call wide angle vision. And when I was a kid, he called it splatter vision, right? When we teach it to children, we're like, pretend you're an owl and your eyes are too big to move in the sockets, and you're just taking in the whole scene in front of you. And if you want to look left, you know, you close your eyes and turn your head to the left and then open your eyes again. So we have them kind of imitate the owl, and they really like that. And, you know, we tell them, you know, go into owl eyes, and they all love that, and they go right into it. But, you know, whether you learned it as wide angle vision or peripheral vision or owl eyes, sort of doesn't matter. It's just a form of expanding your senses. The addition of calling it owl eyes, though, adds this animal form element. So remember, you know, expanding senses, which I spent a bit of time on already, and then owl eyes are related. But now when you call it owl eyes, you're going to add the dimension of animal forms. So the core routine in Coyote's Guide, expanding our senses, and then animal forms, two different core routines we're talking about here. So what is an animal form? The best way to describe an animal form is to imagine children, or maybe back to when you were a child, when you pretended to be an animal, right? When I was a boy, I pretended to be a dinosaur with my friend Mark up the street, Mark Hanna. You know, we'd always fight over who got to be the Tyrannosaurus Rex and who got to be the Brontosaurus, because you know how that story's going to end, right? But, you know, when I taught my children, including Aiden, you know, animal forms when they were little, then the next thing you know, they're hopping around the house like rabbits, and you can't stop them. It's like kids want to imitate creatures. You teach them how to hop like a frog, and then they start doing that around your living room, and then you're like regretting that you taught them animal forms. Parents complain to us after the kids have learned animal forms at a program. When they come home, they're hopping around the house like mice or rabbits and climbing on couches like squirrels and leaping from the couch to the chair, you know. But animal forms is literally, you know, allowing your imagination to go into the place where you are literally play acting an animal, as if you're going to, you know, perform that animal's personality in a play. And there's all this wonderful magic that comes out of animal forms. And we'll come back to that in a separate episode where we can get into the magic of animal forms. But I now have to bring up two, you know, owl eyes or wide angle vision and fox walking, which is what we're going to talk about today. And remember all of the intentionality we put on awareness of tactile, what information are we getting from our skin? What are we getting from our sense of weight, temperature, cold, this kind of thing. Now, when we're doing this way of movement on the landscape, we're now talking about adding a couple of sensory input systems here. One of them is called the vestibular system, and the other one is called proprioception. And combined, this is your body aware of itself in three-dimensional space, aware of motion, aware of up, down, weight, gravity, momentum. A lot of stuff gets processed in the nervous system when we're working with those things. And yeah, a little while ago, the Living Connection First Village, we spent an entire month encouraging all the villagers to practice wide angle vision and fox walking together. And then we shared about it, you know, in our village gatherings. And it's quite a remarkable, powerful combination. It's one that Tom Brown taught me from early age. He always was reminding me to fox walk and be in splatter vision, as he called it in those days. But the combination of owl eyes and fox walking, or wide angle vision and fox walking, is a very synergistic pairing, if you will. And the outcome is quite remarkable.
Yeah, we had such great feedback and stories from the villagers. So fox walking is this way of moving on the landscape where we're really attuned to how our feet are landing on the earth. And it's a very calming and centered way of moving. And combining that with wide angle vision and the other sensory awareness brings us deep into the quiet mind, where we are not only mentally quiet and physically quiet, you know, our footfalls tend to make less noise when we're walking this way. And being again in that sensory meditation, expanding our our awareness out into our senses, quiets our cognitive mind, and we have this experience of almost invisibility that can emerge, where there's a deep silence in our being. And the feedback that we were getting, the stories that we were hearing, were of animals coming out onto the trail in front of people and knowing that they were there, but not minding that they were there, and kind of going about their business. So when I say invisibility, it's, you know, not necessarily that they were unseeable, but the sense of being part of the landscape, of being so in tune with a natural state, a natural way of flowing with the environment, that it causes very little to no disruption, right? We would call it having a low concentric ring or even no concentric ring. And yet a sense of comfort, right? So if there is a vibe that's being put out by someone walking in this way and really sinking into the sensory awareness, dilating the vision out, that in itself is a message of, I'm a safe being. I'm not in threat mode. Versus if we look at our evolution, right? A hunter might be fox walking with a really focused vision, right? And that focused vision creates a penetrating affect that is picked up on. So if an animal walked in front of someone that was hunting them, they would likely feel that, right? That sense of being preyed upon. So both the fox walking, right? The moving really gently, slowly, being attuned to what's around us, sends out that information of, okay, this human is moving in such a way that I don't feel threatened if I'm an animal, right? And also that intent of expanding the vision out, that diffusion of focus, that panning out awareness visually, actually literally conveys a message of safety. That's a polyvagal theory concept that is very well known interpersonally between two humans. You know, when somebody has a focused vision, that sends a message of intensity and possible threat, versus a soft gaze sends the message of relaxation. I'm at ease. I'm not activated in a way that could possibly be threatening.
There's a story I'm thinking of with my son just this last week too, around this idea of expanding the senses and why I think owl eyes is such a beautiful thing to practice. He had left his phone on top of his backpack and then picked up his backpack and dropped his phone in the field. He was really sure about that. And he all of a sudden remembered him. He went back to go and look. And he went and looked for where he was sure he had dropped his phone. And he looked all around and I could see him, you know, running around in the field looking frantically. And he was, you know, looking around. And then he came back and he's like, it's not there. My soccer coach must have taken it home, you know. And I just had this hit and I was like, all right, why don't we go look one more time? You know, and so I parked the car and we go back out there. And I just walked out there with just this very sort of open owl eyes, just kind of keeping my eyes open and looking around. But also my unconscious sort of scanning pattern had no expectations. I wasn't like looking for the phone in a particular place or anything. I was just sort of noticing what was there. And I spotted his phone in about 5 seconds. And he had picked it up and he had put it somewhere on a bench that was about 30 feet from where he thought. But it's amazing too how much our preconceived notions of what the environment around us is going to be can completely blind us to what's actually there. And I think that's why I love owl eyes so much, because it is also sort of this just basic practice of notice what is there, not what you expect to see there, you know, and kind of opening ourselves up and practicing that. And I think what happens is the more we practice that, the more we tend to notice what's actually happening as well, right? And that's just useful in general. I have always sort of believed that awareness is the fundamental skill. Every other skill we have is only as useful as our awareness of what is actually happening around us in the environment, right? And so, you know, practicing owl eyes in that way is just so helpful. And then, of course, fox walking, even just the fact of slowing down, right? It just allows us to notice more of what is going on around us. And that's not even to begin to get into all the other benefits that you guys have already talked about. So I'm a huge fan of these two things. And I also love owl eyes personally over wide angle vision. I know you were talking about kids love imitation, but I just think that imitation and imagination gets us back into that part of our brain too. And it's just more fun that way, you know? And I think if you kind of have two options and one of them's more fun, well, yeah, I know which one I'm going to pick, you know?
Probably also helps that I taught it to you as a boy, as owl eyes, right? So you grew up with it. Let's talk a little bit more about fox walking. You know, what is it? I think my favorite way to talk about it, I mean, there are, you know, techniques involved in how you put your foot down and how you curl your toes up and your heel up. And so the outside ball of your foot touches first, you roll down across the ball, you drop your heel, you drop your toe, and then you shift your weight. I mean, that's technically what's happening. But if people approach it that way, then they get all self-conscious and awkward and they can't pull off fox walking very quickly. But you all can relate to this, because this is the fastest way I've learned to teach fox walking to people. I get people to all stand in a circle so I can see everyone, right? And then I say, okay, everyone now turn to your left. So you're facing the back of the person, you know, who was prior to your left. And so now you've got a circle where everyone's facing the back of the person that was to their left. All right, now let's all just start walking slowly in a circle. And now I can still see everyone. And I say, use your wide angle vision and turn your head slightly towards the center of the circle so you can see everyone in the circle. You know, and then everyone's starting to smile and crack up because everyone's both self-conscious and aware at the same time. And it gets really humorous. And I say, okay, now take your right hand and put it out into the circle. And they all put their hand out into the circle. And I imagine you've got an aluminum tray that's slippery on your palm, okay? And that all automatically people start to slow down and they start to glide instead of bounce, because that's the first thing. You know, if we don't learn fox walking, we bounce up and down with every step. And I'll get back into the mechanics in a minute on that. But now I say to them, just bend your knees slightly and you'll find it easier to glide. And then all of a sudden everyone's gliding, right? And I'm like, now imagine that that tray has six long stemmed glasses filled to the top with these fancy cream cordials that are worth $35 each. And you have to deliver it to the table. That's going to leave you a big tip if you don't spill a drop and if you deliver it smoothly. And keep in mind, it's busy in the dining room. So now let's go. And then I have them speed up and then I have them slow down. And it's amazing how fast everyone gets fox walking, because if they keep their eyes on the horizon, as I tell them, use their wide angle vision to keep the horizon from bouncing up and down and be very conscious that they're gliding, not bouncing, people get it that fast. You know, that's a fast way to learn fox walking. And yes, I mean, Tom Brown drew out these charts in his books that show you how to place your foot. You can go to that later. I would say master the glide first. The glide gives you the advantage of not having a bouncing horizon. If you don't have a bouncing horizon, then any movement, a flick of a deer ear, a flutter of a junco's wings will catch your eye and show you a bobcat or, you know, find you a fox. That's what happens when you blend fox walking and owl eyes together. It's super cool. And the last thing I'll say here is that, you know, there's six brain wave states, you know, that are recognized, you know, that you can measure with an electroencephalogram, right? Three of them are sort of associated with sleep, okay? Like the three lowest ones, you know, the SWS, the delta, and the theta. These are really, really deep brain states, usually associated with sleep or advanced meditation. But when we're in our modern life and we're hit with stress, anxiety, fear, worry, self-doubt, whatever it is, we are in a beta brainwave and our mind is running a million miles an hour. What Sarah so beautifully explained earlier was the change in our brainwaves where we drop into that alpha state, which is totally related to that passive sort of non-focus where you're taking in everything. We learn the best. Our immune system works the best. We're most creative. So we're at our best when we're in alpha. So the combination of fox walking and owl eyes as it becomes second nature will automatically generate alpha brainwaves, which puts you in a much better state of mind and makes you happier, healthier. You know, it's good for your well-being.
Yeah, I agree with John, the way you described the easiest way of getting into fox walking is less thinking about what your feet are doing and getting into that glide mode. And then also with what Aidan said, that our awareness is so key. So for me, the magic of fox walking is in that awareness of how my feet are touching the earth, and not necessarily like the foot placement that John was describing, but the feeling of my feet on the earth. So I have, it gives me this like grounded connection to that sensation, right? We think about the bottom of our feet has more nerve endings than any other area of our body, like, you know, per square inch. So there's mad amount of information that's coming in through the soles of our feet, and having that awareness of the sensation without, you know, needing to analyze it, but to allow that subconscious awareness to inform us. So that sinking into the earth with my feet on the ground, and then having my visual field expanded out. So it's like the dual awareness, right, of the earth below my feet and the landscape around me. It really leaves very little opportunity for thinking, right? It really drops you into a place of quiet mind and that calm alpha state that John's talking about, like really efficiently.
Yeah, and everything you're describing, Sarah, too, it just, you know, helping us get into that happier, more peaceful place, more grounded place, you know, that just, it just makes for better interactions too. Like I think about, I suppose I still do this. I just don't walk down hallways quite as often as I used to, but it used to be when I was walking down a hallway from my office to go to an important meeting that I would actually put myself into fox walking and owl eyes, even inside, you know, just to kind of give myself that little period of sinking in and finding my center again. And it's just, it's really amazing how well it works, because I think that we all are familiar with meditation and meditation's ability to ground us. And the challenge is that we don't always have 15 minutes between things to get recentered, right? But we are almost always have a, you know, 30 seconds or something like that. And I think this is one thing that I have found really helps that. And we have been talking about imitation a lot in these last few seasons, George Buman's podcast, Dan Gardoki's podcast. We also did a whole podcast on imitation back in July, and just wanted to represence it here as well. The owl eyes, right? This idea of your eyes are too big in your eye sockets, so you can't even turn your eyes and you have to close your eyes and turn your head. And I can still imagine people demonstrating that as a kid and how much fun that is. And I always think about this story that Dad, you've told about the fox that ran up a snow-covered branch, right, and didn't spill any of the snow off. There are so many different versions of this, but just like when we're imitating the waiter, all of a sudden we're all gliding. When we imitate animals or beings outside in nature that can do something we can't, I think it does get us access to a part of ourselves. And I guess that must be mirror neurons that are helping us to do that, right? Like mirror neurons are a big part of our development as humans. Whatever's going on there scientifically, it's fun. And it's also useful. It helps you get better at things as well. So another reason to practice fox walking and owl eyes.
Agreed. It's super fun. And, you know, there's multiple ways of being in that mode, right? Like you can be walking slowly, which is kind of how we've been referring to it today. But you can also run with this awareness, right? I was actually just down at the beach for a run and very much in that mode. I chose not to wear shoes today because that'll really slow you down and make you really aware of your feet while you're running. So yes, fox walking, that awareness of your feet touching the ground while you're running and being in wide angle vision or owl eyes, moving swiftly or stalking, right? Moving really, really slowly if you're sneaking up on an animal or a friend. And as Aidan said, in the house, right? Fox walking around is really fun. You can really track your concentric ring, right? How your pets maybe respond to you, but also your roommates or family members. How gently can we be, right? in each other's presence, and definitely at the grocery store, super fun. It really actually helps me ground and feel like, okay, I'm centered in myself, because there's so much chaos really for me at a grocery store, so much information, so many people going around, you know, to slow down and go into that centered place, that bring that alpha frequency in, try it. I mean, sometimes I think it takes practice in quiet places to get into the mode and really find your alignment with the practices. But then, wow, they can be really, really powerful allies when we move into busy streets or busy places.
The mechanical benefits. Think about all of the hip replacements and knee replacements you hear about now. You don't hear about Son Bushman getting hip replacements or knee replacements. It doesn't happen because they're in a perpetual state of foxwalking their whole life because they spend a lot of time barefoot on the sand, where hiding in the sand are these sharp, thorny things, right? These all different kinds of seeds and stuff and branches with sharp thorns. And, you know, it's so amazing. You know, when I watch the Bushmen move, they're totally gliding and foxwalking everywhere they go. And they're always in that state of wide angle vision. But again, they grew up this way, so they don't differentiate. They don't name them, right? This is just how you are. But I decided to spend a couple of days walking barefoot with them. And I found that if I was very conscious about foxwalking and imitating the way they walk, so it isn't just foxwalking, it's like imitating the nuance of the way the Bushmen walk. When I did get a thorn, it didn't penetrate too deeply into my foot. And I watched the Bushmen, they would step on something that was hidden in the sand. When they lifted up their foot, the little thing would be stuck to their callus. But they had this way of just brushing that off against their shin on their other leg. And then they don't even miss a beat. You know, it's really a cool thing. And I remember when I learned fox walking and then didn't practice it, I stepped on a nail one day when I was with Tom, and it was in a fence board. So it was sticking up and it was rusty, and it went right through the bottom of my sneaker, right through my foot, and popped out the top of my sneaker. But I was in such the mechanics of falling forward onto my feet, modern walking style, that my momentum caused the board to lift up behind me and push the nail to the side. And then I fell backwards on the board on my hands. And Tom goes, "That hurt, huh?" And I'm like, "Dang it." He said, "Are you going to learn fox walking now? Because that wouldn't have happened if you were fox walking." I'm just like, "Ah."
Well, oh my goodness. That's a horrible story, John.
But it gets the point across, because it's pointing out the mechanics of, you know, when we were little, the way we learned to walk was literally to stand up, kind of wiggle in, you know, upright space, lean forward and start falling, and then letting our feet run out in front and keep us from falling. So it's like this state of continuously falling forward and catching ourselves on our feet. As a result, what we're doing is we're literally pounding our weight onto our foot with every step, which sends shocks through our knees and our hips. And 50, 60 years of that has a price. And if you're foxwalking, your weight is behind you. Actually, your weight is actually right. You know, your head is over your shoulders, is over your hips, is over your feet. You know, just like in martial arts, right? They teach you this posture. So you're moving in a very centered way. Your feet are going out in front of you in the way that, you know, like a person with impaired vision would use a cane to feel the ground in front of them before they commit to showing up there. What's happening now is your feet are going out, touching the ground, but your weight is still over your head, shoulders, hips, aligned over your back foot. So your front foot is placed, and then you move yourself over your foot, but you don't lean forward. Your eyes are at the horizon. You maintain that upright posture. Now there's hardly any shock on your feet. And when you look at the Bushmen's footprints in the sand, they're like these perfectly flat feet on the sand. There's no pressure down. When you look at modern people's footfalls in the Kalahari sand, you see this divot where the toes go deep and they push off with the ball of their foot, and then their other foot lands and there's a heel strike with a little explosion of sand and then a lean forward and a push off with the ball. So you can actually see the physics of the difference between, you know, what almost feels like a violent pounding of the ground in an unconscious modern walk, versus a Bushman, which is just literally gliding over the surface of the sand, like a fox not wanting to break through the snow. It's really quite beautiful and very clear. So the mechanics of fox walking are very, very good for you.
Yeah, I really strongly believe in the power of the mechanical healing that can happen with fox walking. I've been running my whole life, not like super intensely. I'm not like a marathon runner, but I've always loved to run. And I have a leg length discrepancy, a true leg length discrepancy, which means my right leg is actually 3/4 of an inch shorter than my left leg. The bones are actually shorter. So you can imagine what that does to your body while you're running. And I suffered chronic lower back pain and knee pain up until my late 20s when I started running in barefoot sandals, which are really, really thin sandals. They're about 9 millimeters thick. And what that did for me was allowed me to have awareness of how my feet were landing on the ground. And combining that with this awareness of fox walking, you know, the more of the how to put your foot down, but just again, really being able to feel, right? It shifted my whole gait. And I was able to receive the information that my body was giving back to me, right? Like John's talking about slamming our feet in the ground. Well, that's probably why we have modern shoes that are really thick, right? Because we forgot how to walk. So now we have to protect our feet. So if we take that away, right, then we suddenly have to start walking or running appropriately, right? Because you're not going to slam your bare heel into the tar, right? Or into the rocks or into the, even, you know, into sand. There's something very informative, right? Where your body's feedback is informing you all the time when you're able to actually have sensory awareness of your feet.
If you are an upstairs neighbor and you have downstairs neighbors, they're going to love you if you learn to fox walk. You know, it's so easy to tell from the lower floor if someone upstairs is not fox walking. If they are fox walking, the only hint you get that they're moving up there is the occasional creak. Try as I might, when I fox walk out in the morning and try not to wake up Sarah, there's this spot on the floor that creaks whether I'm fox walking or not. And I'm just like, ah. And then Sarah scares the daylights out of me so often. She loves practicing fox walking in the house where she comes up behind me and then suddenly scares me. And it's just one of her delights. So you'll get better at scaring your neighbors, your friends, your housemates. Definitely your neighbors will like you more. You'll drop into a more creative, open learning state. Your immune system will improve. You'll be happier. You won't get nails through your feet. You'll see more wildlife. You'll get closer to wildlife. You won't scare people or nature. You know, like there are so many benefits to combining fox walking and owl eyes or wide angle vision in honor of Tom, who's now an ancestor. And thank you, Tom, for teaching us that and, you know, allowing us to embody it and then share it with others, because the benefits are really there.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. If you enjoy this podcast, it would mean a lot to us if you would take a minute to follow or subscribe. Following the podcast helps us, and it helps you, because you'll never miss an episode. We'd also love for you to give us a 5-star rating and review and share an episode with a friend. To learn more about our current offerings, visit livingconnectionfirst.net. We'll see you next time.